Welcome to NucleCast, the official podcast of the NY Deterrence Center. Our host is Dr. Adam Lautha, co-founder and vice president for research at the National Institute for Deterrence Studies. The NY Deterrence Center is a 501c3 organization ensuring a broader understanding of the nation's strategic nuclear deterrence and its ongoing modernization. Thank you for listening and welcome to the show. The views of the host and the guests are their own.
Welcome back to another great episode of NucleCast. Of course, I am your host, Adam Lautha, and today, I say this every time, but we have a great guest. Of course, I'm talking about Gordon Chang. Everybody knows Gordon Chang. I mean, who is a more profound thinker and speaker and writer on China and the threat China poses to the United States than Gordon Chang? He's got a new book, Plan Red, China's Project to Destroy America. And you can follow him at Gordon G. Chang on X. And, you know, he's got other books. So if you haven't read his previous books, they're great, too. I've read a couple. Gordon, thanks for being with us on NucleCast.
Oh, well, thank you so much, Adam.
So you spend your life's work has been looking at China and looking at China's intentions toward the United States, the West, the rest of the world. So you've got a new book about it, and the title of the book tells us sort of what you think China is up to. Can you give us a sense of, you know, historically the United States thought that we could bring China, you know, to our side, and through free markets, China would ultimately democratize and we'd be great friends, and then we destroy the Soviet Union and it's all going to be happiness and we're going to hug pandas and it'll all be great. And it hasn't turned out that way. So tell us what China's actual plan is.
Xi Jinping has been pushing the imperial era notion that Chinese rulers not only had the right to rule what they call Tianxia, or all under heaven, but they actually were compelled by heaven to do so. In other words, Xi Jinping believes that China is the world's only legitimate state. And it's not just him. This goes back through all of the communist period, back to Mao, who talked about this many times, and of course, through two millennia of Chinese rulers. But also since 2017, Xi Jinping's officials have been talking about the moon and Mars as sovereign Chinese territory. In other words, part of the People's Republic of China. So we have the most ambitious aggressors in history.
Yeah, that's an interesting point you make. I remember when I heard that, and I thought that has to be hyperbole. So when the Chinese say these things that to Americans and Westerners, you know, we kind of laugh because we think, well, they can't be serious. Are they serious about the kinds of what we would think of as ridiculous things? Are they serious when they say that stuff?
They are serious, and it's consistent. So, for instance, you go back to Mao Zedong, 1966, he wrote a letter to his wife, Zhang Qing, and in it he said that, quote, great chaos under heaven achieves great order under heaven. Now, great order under heaven was Mao's phrase for worldwide Chinese rule. So it goes back. It's consistent Chinese thinking. Plus, also, it's been layered with communism, which also is a global system. So they are serious about it. They know that at this point they can't achieve it, but they're working toward it. And we need to take our enemies seriously. We didn't, for instance, take Osama bin Laden seriously. And in 1993, he killed six Americans with the bombing at the North Tower of the World Trade Center. We still didn't take him seriously. We didn't sit up and pay attention until one day in 2001, where he killed 2,977 Americans. And then we said, how did that happen? Well, China is much more powerful than Al-Qaeda ever is or was. And so really right now, we need to start paying attention to what the Chinese actually say about us, because that's what motivates their thinking and that motivates their action.
So give me a better sense of what their actual plan is. What is their plan to destroy America?
Well, Xi Jinping has taken two pages out of Mao's, his hero's, peasant movement playbook. The first one is to encircle the cities from the countryside. This is how Mao Zedong was able to prevail over Chiang Kai-shek's nationalists. And I think that Xi Jinping looks at Ukraine, North Africa, Middle East, India and Pakistan as countryside, and we, the United States of America, is the city. But also, the second page involves the fomenting of chaos. And I just mentioned that quote from Mao. So I think that Xi Jinping views the destruction of societies around the world as really way stations on his plan to attain rule over the entire planet. What we see is he's fueling the war in Ukraine. That war would not be continuing now if it weren't for Chinese assistance. And by the way, Xi Jinping greenlighted that war. Then you have China and Russia fueling insurgencies in North Africa that look like wars. And we've been turfed out of, for instance, Niger because of these insurgencies. And then you have China behind Iran's October 7th assault on Israel. You have China behind Pakistan's continual needling and sometimes war on India. So that's why we have a world which appears so unsettled and disrupted. It's because China is doing that. And they believe that that's one of the ways that they can obtain first dominance and then rule.
Can you help American listeners understand? So one of the things I think that's distinctly different between, Americans and Chinese leaders is just sort of the mindset and how we think versus how they think. And, Xi Jinping is a big fan of the Spring and Autumn Annals. And he's looked back to that text and sort of this backward looking nature to look for lessons learned and look for strategies from the past. And, maybe he sees this as sort of a warring states period. And, he's going to come out on top. Can you maybe help our American listeners sort of better understand that mindset and how they think relative to sort of the optimism, the forward-lookingness, the lack of concern for history that is sort of part of American culture and thinking?
Well, Americans are oblivious. We believe that we've got a God-given right to ignore what our enemies say about us. We have this notion about how the rest of the world should calculate their interests. And too often, we assume that that's, in fact, the way others look at us. And we have paid for that dearly in American lives. And I believe that we probably will pay for it again because we have refused to understand what Xi Jinping is in fact doing. Now, on the general Chinese mindset, Henry Kissinger often grossly misrepresented what Chinese leaders were thinking, but he was right on one thing. And he did say, Chinese leaders are the only set of leaders around the world who actually look back thousands of years and develop strategy and look at strategies and apply them in the modern context. And Xi Jinping was right about that. Kissinger was right about that. But the thing here, and if we bring this into a present-day context, you have a communist regime which is deeply insecure. And that means, and this Americans don't want to think about this, but this is how I think we could lose our country, because we don't understand what the Chinese, how they view us. The Chinese regime believes that we are an existential threat. And they believe that not because of anything that we Americans say or do, but it's because of who we are. An insecure regime in Beijing is worried about the inspirational impact of American values and form of governance on the Chinese people, which means we will never have amicable relations with China as long as the Communist Party rules it. In May 2019, People's Daily, which is the most authoritative publication in China, when People's Daily speaks, that's China speaking. So in May 2019, People's Daily carried a landmark editorial that declared a, quote, people's war on us. And of course, we didn't pay attention. But people's war is a phrase that has great resonance in Communist Party thinking. It is and if we needed help on this, PLA Daily, which is the main propaganda organ of the Chinese military, in 2003 in the spring, wrote a piece that defined people's war for us. It called it, quote unquote, total war. And we know that China has a policy or approach of unrestricted warfare. That comes from the title of a slim book by two Chinese Air Force colonels in 1999. And they argue that China can use any tactic to bring down the U.S. And they do refer to Osama bin Laden hitting our country. That is Osama bin Laden, whom the Chinese had a relationship with in 1999. And that's 2 years before 9/11. So we Americans, we have better start to think about what the Chinese are saying, look at what they're doing, and preparing, because Xi Jinping is preparing for war. And we believe we're at peace. We are not at peace.
Yeah, that's you bring up a good point, because this is one of those things, if you think, so in Joint Publication 5, in an older edition, that is, you know, the planning document for, you know, the Joint Staff, there was this sort of bell curve, and it was the phases of conflict. And you would move from peace, and then you would have these five phases. And then you would end up back in peace. And I don't think Americans or, you know, our political leaders understand that there's not like peace and war and then back to peace. There's constant war. And this is sort of an idea the Russians developed, the Chinese have picked up, and that it's not necessarily that you're ever at peace with your adversary. It's just that the form of war that you're in can change. And can be, it can be, you know, intellectual war, it can be economic war, it can be kinetic war, but you're always at war. And I don't think we as Americans fundamentally understand that we are at war with China. We've been at war with China, and they certainly think they're at war with us. It's just that because we recognize these sort of very clear phases, and this doesn't look like that, that therefore we must be in peace. And the Chinese don't seem to, or the Americans don't seem to understand that's where we are. Now, you mentioned something else that made me think about Taiwan. And in trying to understand the, you know, understanding the history of Taiwan. And Taiwan has never really been an integrated part of China. I mean, the history of Taiwan is one where it has largely been something else. It was an Aboriginal island. The Europeans had it for hundreds of years. Then the Hakka, you know, were kicked out and went there. It was a pirate kingdom. It's been all kind. The Japanese were there. Only for about a century or so did the Manchus try to, you know, control it. So as I try to understand why Xi and the Chinese leadership think it's so integral, and they've created a narrative about Taiwan that says this is just this core province that has broken away, and it's false. But help me understand. I kind of think it's because, like you said, it's a close symbol of what democracy and free markets and liberty look like, and therefore, and particularly for, you know, Han Chinese people looking at Taiwan saying, hey, those people are us. We could live like that too. Or is it that they still, is it that? Is it also perhaps that, you know, this is an unfinished war from 1949, and this is the last remnants of the enemy, and they have to destroy them? Because we had a Taiwanese expert on, and I got the sense that the Taiwanese don't see the danger. They have a sense that, this is all manageable. Can you help us better understand sort of what the Chinese think about Taiwan and why and what that danger actually might be?
Yeah, first of all, on the elemental level, it is the unfinished Chinese Civil War. Because Chiang Kai-shek fled the mainland in 1949, went to Taiwan, and People's Republic has not been able to conquer it. So there is that. There's a bigger issue, though, And that is the people in Taiwan, they don't believe that they are Chinese. And we can see this from self-identification surveys. And I love talking about this, but I'll just sort of put it off to the side for a moment. They don't, by and large, see themselves as Chinese. That does not matter. What matters is that the people in the mainland, because of decades of indoctrination, believe that they're Chinese. And because people in the mainland think that they're Chinese, then this the Taiwan's democracy undercuts the core narrative of the People's Republic, and that is that the Chinese people are not ready to govern themselves. Well, obviously, the people in Taiwan who are quote-unquote Chinese are governing themselves. They have a vibrant and very successful democracy. So as long as Taiwan exists as a democracy, it undermines this whole sense of legitimacy of the Communist Party. And it's, you know, there's a lot that can be said about it, but that is the two reasons why I think the People's Republic is absolutely determined to annex Taiwan.
And I've wondered, and I've asked my Taiwanese friends this, and it's, do you understand that for the Chinese, you know, when the PLA comes, let's suppose the PLA comes and they win that conflict because you weren't prepared, they're not going to just sort of change out political leadership and put their folks and keep the same system. They're probably going to remove a large number of Taiwanese and put them in other places and disperse them to ensure the destruction of your society. And I don't think, you know, the Taiwanese understand the extent to which the Chinese, the PLA, the CCP, are going to ensure that that society can't reconstitute itself.
Yeah, you know, Chiang Kai-shek did that when he came over in 1949, and the White Terror lasted for decades. So this is not theoretical. There's a lot going on with regard to Taiwan, because you do have the descendants of those who came over in 1949 are still politically powerful, and they do believe in one China and that Taiwan is part of it. And so they have a very different view. Now, they are a very small portion of society. In self-identification surveys, you see no more than 7% of the people view themselves as Chinese only. And among the younger age cohorts, the 16 to 24, you have about 1% think that they are Chinese only. So this is changing, because the percentage who believe that they're Taiwanese only has increased dramatically. It's now in the high 60s. Some surveys show it even higher than that, low 80s. So it's a very divided society, but the Taiwanese, even on Taiwan, are not as politically powerful as their numbers dictate. Now, recently we've seen a shift with the election of William Lai, Lai Zhengde. We've seen now two successive presidents from the same party. This is the first time in Taiwan's democratic history that that's occurred. And the Democratic Progressive Party is the Taiwan Party. So maybe things are going to change. But right now, the Kuomintang, the Chinese remnants, they're doing everything they possibly can to block Taiwan spending more on defense and taking a robust posture against Beijing.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. Do you think that if, you know, there have been some who have said, well, 2027 is a magic year, you know, where the PLA attacks. Do you have any sense of whether you think that the PLA will attack, or will they use a cordon? Will they, you know, how do you think this might look? Or is, as some suggest, this is hyperbole, this is America seeking a war? What is your take on that?
Yeah, I worry a lot of things about China. One of the things I do not worry about is China starting hostilities with an invasion of the main island of Taiwan. The reason is, first of all, that war would be extremely unpopular. Because the people in China, as we just talked about, view the people in Taiwan as Chinese. And Chinese will tell you, and you'll hear officials say this, and you'll hear this on the street everywhere across China, that Chinese do not kill Chinese. So I don't think that the Communist Party thinks it can rally the Chinese people by killing a lot of quote-unquote Chinese, including the Chinese invaders. But there are some more practical reasons why. So, for instance, in order to launch an invasion of the main island of Taiwan, Xi Jinping has to give some flag officer almost complete control of the Chinese military, because this would be a combined air, land, sea operation. That would make that general or admiral the most powerful figure in China. Even in the best of days, Xi Jinping is not going to do that, and certainly not now, when he very well may not even control the PLA, because we are seeing that the number one uniformed officer, General Zhang Yaoshuo, is an adversary of Xi Jinping and has been sacking Xi Jinping's loyalists in the military. So I'm not even sure if Xi Jinping, if he woke up in one morning and picked up the phone and said, we're invading Taiwan, I don't think that that happens. But also there's some other things here. And that's not to say Taiwan is safe. So for instance, some of Taiwan's islands are no more than 3 miles off of the coast of China. Xi Jinping, let's say he is in control of the military. I don't think so, but let's say he is. Yeah, he could grab Kinmen or something like that. But the reason why Taiwan isn't safe is because we are seeing China engaged in very provocative activities from South Korea in the north to Australia in the south. And one of those incidents could easily spiral into war. And right now, because of the turmoil in Beijing, which is another story, but because of the turmoil in Beijing, I don't think that the regime can de-escalate. So Taiwan gets involved in a war through the back door. And that's why the people in Taiwan, I think they've got to be prepared, yeah, for 2027, but they got to be prepared for 2025, because this could occur at any time. We've been seeing some very, very dangerous Chinese military maneuvers at Scarborough Shoal in the South China Sea, Second Thomas Shoal, other features that belong to the Philippines. This has war written all over them.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing, because it seems to me that there's a good chance that the PLA, you know, is certainly more aggressive than the political leadership, and that there could be a commander, an operational commander, who could take an action that perhaps was not approved at the highest levels that ultimately starts a conflict.
And there's another thing, and that is, you know, I said that a war on Taiwan would be unpopular. But, you know, among the senior leaders who are now fighting among themselves, and the infighting is intense, they could very well see that a war is in their interest. Because Xi Jinping could realize, look, a war someplace, Taiwan, Philippines, South Korea, who knows, a war someplace would prevent other senior Communist Party figures from challenging him. And so he might see war to be in his interest. And so I don't think he's in a mood to de-escalate. The Chinese leadership, the civilian leaders, I think are more dangerous actually than the military. I think there's a military that for the most part doesn't want to go to war. They want to huff and puff. They want to show off. But I don't really think that they want to disrupt a lifestyle which has become very, very cushy for generals and admirals.
This episode of NucleCast is brought to you by the AMLA Deterrence Center, whose mission is to educate Americans about the nuclear enterprise and strategic deterrence. So we haven't really talked about the topic of nuclear weapons yet. Can you maybe give us a sense of the Chinese breakout? You know, how big will they go? What is their intention? Are they trying to reach parity or superiority with the United States? What's taking place here?
Well, on the numbers, you know, the consensus view is that China has somewhere like 500 or so warheads at this moment. But it really at this moment is not the important thing. It's like where they're going. And, you know, the Pentagon in a November 2022 report said that China would is planning to have 1,500 warheads by 2035. James Howe, the noted nuclear expert, says that there's a maximum of, what, 3,740 by 2035. Rick Fisher, who's been counting delivery systems, says the number is 7,000. Whatever it is, we should listen to Admiral Charles Richard when he was STRATCOM commander, and he talked about China and a strategic breakout. Frank Kendall, when he was Secretary of the Air Force, said that this is the most frightening thing that he's seen in his decades of public service. So, yeah, I don't think parity is in the playbook of China, or at least as an ultimate goal. They want nuclear weapons. And you know, they're very clear. You know, we had President Trump in August say that he wanted to start what he called denuclearization talks with Russia and China. And he said the Russians wanted to do that, and he thought the Chinese would as well. Well, China turned around and said, no, we're not talking to the U.S. about this. And that is a consistent position. They do not want to engage in discussions. They don't want an arms control agreement because they don't want verification. They want to be able to intimidate others with their arsenal because, it, as you know, that worn-out phrase, but it is true, you know, win without fighting from Sun Tzu. They want to use nuclear weapons to coerce countries such as the United States not coming to the aid of China's victims. You know, China saw what Vladimir Putin did in the run-up to the 2022 invasion of Ukraine, where Putin was threatening to use his nukes. And the Biden administration and the countries in Europe did not defend Ukraine, did not come to Ukraine's defense as they should have, not with the determination and vigor that was required. So, you know, Xi Jinping sees this and says, well, if they wouldn't confront Putin, well, they're certainly not going to confront me because I'm so much grander than Putin. So if I want to take Taiwan, I'm just going to threaten them with nuclear destruction. And that's something, by the way, Chinese generals have done since about 2005. You know, that famous comment about the United States, would we trade Los Angeles for Taipei? So, yeah, their goal is superiority. Their goal is to intimidate us. And no, it's not worth trying to bring China to the table because even if you could theoretically do it, it would be worth it's just too much effort. Our effort should be in building up our arsenal and intimidating the Chinese. That's deterrence.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, it's that time in the show where I like to bring out Bob the Genie. And as I rub my magic lamp, Bob grants all guests three wishes. So, Gordon, what is your first wish?
First wish is that China becomes a democracy.
Now, that's a tall order even for Bob. So do you see a path towards democracy? What would it take for Bob to grant you that wish?
Well, I mean, the party right now looks unstable. Now, there have been two revolutions in Chinese history. There was the 1911 revolution, when we went from the Qing dynasty and two millennia of imperial rule to a republic. And then, of course, 1949, you have the communists beating Chiang Kai-shek. You go from the republic, which was sort of a dictatorship, into a communist state. You know, I think that the communists will fall. I think that essentially we'll see periods of chaos, and eventually the Chinese people will get it right. Now, whether that is measured in months, years, or centuries, I don't know. But I think it would take a long time. So I'm glad we've got Bob on our side on this one.
Okay, so how about your second wish?
Well, that's Russia becomes a democracy.
Man, you are really off. That's a tall order. Bob and I are going to have a discussion about his ability.
Okay, so go to the third wish, which is easier.
Okay, third wish.
The Yankees win the World Series this year.
Oh my gosh. I can't believe you did that. You just went too far, Gordon. You went too far. You know, as an Astros fan, you know, I'm a huge baseball fan. For folks that have seen my office behind me, it's full of autographed baseballs and bats and all that. And so I own a baseball cap from every team in the major leagues except the Yankees. It's the one thing I will never buy is anything from the Yankees. I don't even have a baseball card from a Yankee. So, yeah,
well, you know, I saw the Astros jersey and I see a, so that's what made me think of it. And by the way, is that an Alabama helmet?
That is an Alabama helmet. I'm an Alabama graduate. I worked for Nick Saban when he was a coach. So, it's
okay. Well, let me redeem myself with you then, because I'm a Bama fan.
I knew I liked you. I knew I liked you. Now I know why. All right, Gordon, that's a great one. So it's funny we're talking about baseball and football, but let me ask you, is there a reason you're a Bama fan? What's I'm just curious, what's got you? I understand a lot of people like the Yankees. Why Bama?
You know, I really can't explain it. I guess I liked Nick Saban when he was at LSU, and then he moved over to Bama. I like Alabama as a state. And it's because, you know, my wife and I, we speak, you know, over around the South and the West. A matter of fact, in September and October of 2023, we went on a 3-week, nine-stop, 8,700-mile speaking trip. Number of those talks were in Alabama. But Alabama is, I mean, for Northern, I'm a Northerner, New Jersey. You know, I had this image of Alabama and Mississippi being a Northerner. And when we actually drove through those states, I said, hey, this is a really good place. I mean, it was, in Alabama, you know, the roads are great. You've got these very advanced cities like Birmingham, Huntsville, you know, the Air Force Base in Montgomery, got a lot of history there. So, you know, it's irrational, I guess you could say. It's just, I'm a Bama fan, you know,
well,
Roll Tide.
Roll Tide. I support your irrationality. Now, before we end, because we're out of time, if you were to, you know, have your sort of your walking off the stage final comments for our listeners that you want them to remember 6 months or a year from now, what is it that you want them to remember?
It's what you said. We are not at peace. China has a very different conception of war. They have a plan to destroy our country, and they're working on it. We lost last year 48,000 Americans to fentanyl. We call them overdose deaths, but this illustrates the maliciousness of the regime. Those fentanyl gangs, they are large, they're well-organized, they're international in scope. They couldn't operate in China's total surveillance state without the knowledge and approval of the Communist Party. But we don't have to speculate, because some of the fentanyl producers are state-owned. We know that the Chinese diplomats give cover to the gangs. Every container that leaves China is inspected by Chinese officials. The Chinese fentanyl gangs, they launder their proceeds through the Chinese state banking system. Chinese-owned TikTok promotes illicit drug use. So 48,000 Americans last year were murdered by China's regime, 70,000 in the year before that. This is warfare, and Americans are dying, and we must defend our society. And even though we're a far stronger country than China, I believe that we can lose our country if we don't understand what's occurring and defend ourselves with the robustness and the determination that is absolutely necessary for this time.
All right. Gordon Chang, thanks for joining us on NucleCast.
Thank you, Adam.
And thanks to you, the listeners, and we'll see you next time. Enjoyed that discussion with Gordon Chang. I mean, he's, you know, he spent his whole career, you know, working China issues. And he certainly is one of the more sort of hawkish people when it comes to China. For those who were more dovish, I don't think they've been proven right over time. So Gordon has, you know, he's been more accurate in terms of China's aggression. But that culminating point is what we haven't seen yet. So I agree with Gordon that, you know, we kind of have to take the Chinese seriously and take them at their word. And so it was a great discussion. I was glad he was on.
This has been a production of the Anhwa Deterrent Center, a 501c3 that seeks to educate key decision makers, stakeholders, and the public to ensure a broader understanding of the nation's strategic nuclear deterrent. Our executive producer is Kimberly Charrington, and this episode has been engineered and mixed by David Krunkel. Help us grow our followers by sharing it and follow the show on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter at NucleCast.